Laudator Jesus Christus. This is the English program of Vatican Radio.
Hello, and welcome to our Vatican Weekend English feature program. I'm Susie Hodges, and I'll be with you for the next half hour. Coming up on today's program, the Pope and the People. We have a report on Pope Francis's general audience, where he urges governments and individuals to welcome migrants with open arms and share in their plight, as Jesus did. Fans of Francis of Assisi. We explore the enduring appeal of one of the world's best-known and loved saints, with the help of a Franciscan scholar, a music historian, and an art professor. And safeguarding children. A member of the Pontifical Commission for the Protection of Minors speaks of its achievements and of the lessons learnt since it was set up. We begin with a report on Pope Francis's general audience, where he urged governments and all men and women of goodwill to welcome migrants with open arms and share in their plight, as Jesus did. Speaking to the crowds gathered in St. Peter's Square for his Wednesday audience on September the 27th, the Pope launched a 2-year campaign of action and awareness that aims to encourage people to meet and receive migrants and refugees with open hearts and minds. Entitled Share the Journey, the campaign is being promoted by Caritas Internationalis. Linda Bordoni reports.
Don't be afraid of sharing the journey. Don't be afraid of sharing hope, Pope Francis said as he loudly and clearly welcomed migrants, refugees and asylum seekers.
Do il benvenuto ai migranti, richiedenti di asilo e refugiati.
He thanked Caritas representatives and their president, Cardinal Luis Tagle, who were present in the square to officially launch the 2-year campaign, a campaign that asks people to reach out and become involved in the plight of migrants by listening to their stories, meeting them, posting pro-immigrant messages on social media, rather than by treating them as mere numbers and statistics imbued with negative stereotypes. Opening his arms wide in a powerfully symbolic gesture, Francis said, Christ urges us to welcome our brothers and sisters with our arms truly open.
Cristo stesso ci chiede di accogliere i nostri fratelli e sorelle migranti e rifugiati.
And pointing to the beautiful Bernini colonnade that encircles St. Peter's Square, he said, our embrace of migrants should mimic the colonnade, which represents Mother Church, who embraces everyone by sharing in our common journey.
Con le braccia ben aperte.
He praised Caritas members and other church organisations for their constant commitment in favour of migrants, saying that they are the sign of an open, inclusive and welcoming church. And he voiced his support for a petition which is vying for new legislation on migration, which he said is more pertinent to the current context. The Pope's appeal to replace prejudice with tolerance was enmeshed in his continuing catechesis on Christian hope, during which he reflected on the importance of combating all that threatens our hope. He pointed out that it is hope itself that motivates so many of our brothers and sisters forced to leave their homes in search of a better life. And he urged Christians to never allow themselves to be robbed of hope by what is often a soulless and materialist society. Pope Francis concluded reminding the faithful that we are not alone in our fight against desperation and spiritual emptiness. If God is with us, he said, no one will rob us of that virtue which is necessary to look to the future. No one will rob us of hope. I'm Linda Bordoni.
Time now to focus on the feast day of St. Francis of Assisi that falls on October the 4th. One of the Church's most revered and best-loved saints, St. Francis was born in the 12th century in the Italian town of Assisi and founded the Franciscan Order of Friars Minor. Francis of Assisi was renowned for his love, simplicity, charity and practice of poverty, and he is the patron saint of animals, ecology and of Italy. But I wonder, Do you remember the story behind why Pope Francis decided to take the name of this saint, the first pope ever to do so? He explained the reason for his choice in an audience with the media right at the start of his pontificate. Sean Patrick Lovett now reads an English translation of what the Pope said on that occasion.
Some people wanted to know why the Bishop of Rome wished to be called Francis. Some thought of Francis Xavier, Francis de Sales, and also Francis of Assisi. I'll tell you the story. During the election, I was seated next to the Archbishop Emeritus of Sao Paulo and Prefect Emeritus of the Congregation for the Clergy, Cardinal Claudio Hummis, a good friend. When things were looking dangerous, he encouraged me, and when the votes reached two-thirds, there was the usual applause, because the Pope had been elected. And he gave me a hug and a kiss and said, "Don't forget the poor." And those words came to me, "The poor." Then right away, thinking of the poor, I thought of Francis of Assisi. Then I thought of all the wars, as the votes were still being counted till the end. Francis is also the man of peace. That's how the name came into my heart, Francis of Assisi. For me, he is the man of poverty, the man of peace, the man who loves and protects creation. These days, we don't have a very good relationship with creation, do we? He's the man who gives us the spirit of peace, the poor man. How I would like a church which is poor and for the poor.
Brother William Short is a prize-winning Franciscan scholar and director of an international centre for Franciscan studies and research based in Rome. He explains why Francis of Assisi's appeal stretches so far and wide and way beyond the Catholic Church.
My first guess is that it has something to do with the animal stories. That, you know, somebody who has a story about taming a wolf and preaching to birds, I mean, it's kind of hard to be afraid of him. He doesn't come across as somebody who's kind of a fiery, condemning, inquisitorial type, but rather this kind of harmless, maybe a bit poetic, maybe a bit mystical, a type of person who seems very, very sympathetic, I think. Certainly great care for people, for human suffering. I think he's kind of a personality that's hard to dislike.
And his message is still very relevant today, isn't it?
Oh, I think so. I mean,
In what ways?
Well, I think I'm stealing some words here from Pope Francis, but at his inauguration, he was asked, well, you know, why this name? Why Francis? And he picked out the three things that I think most people would think of in terms of why Francis is still important. His love for the poor. I mean, a real identification and I guess what we would call today a solidarity with people who were really on the margins of his society. His great love for the earth, for what he called our sister, Mother Earth, which was really kind of unprecedented in his day and I think continues to be relevant today. And I'd say a great commitment to peace and particularly a peaceful kind of friendly approach to Muslims in his day with whom Christians were at war. I mean, that's a very, I think, very telling example of someone who's trying to make a difference in his society.
You mentioned there about Pope Francis taking that name. What was your reaction when it was announced that he had taken that name, the first pope ever to do so, of course?
Well, I have to make a confession that I was educated in a Jesuit university, and I presumed he meant St. Francis Xavier. And he clarified very quickly, because more than one person had the same idea. He said, no, it's St. Francis of Assisi. And when he said that, as a Franciscan myself, of course, I was very pleased. And then when he explained why, I said, this is someone who really knows something about St. Francis, and I think that will be a very appealing name to people around the world. And I think it's turned out to be.
St. Francis's life was very colourful. He started off as a pleasure-seeking, rather frivolous man, and then he had this dramatic conversion, if you like. What do you find particularly inspirational about his life or his actions, his words?
I'd say over the years, what I've come to appreciate is that it was as if the words of Jesus in the gospel jumped off the page to him. At some point early in his 20s, it happened and it seemed to go on for the rest of his life. It's as if Jesus were speaking to him personally and directly, and he needed to do something in response. This remarkable ability to take words that he's heard and transform them into a very practical example that other people can see and from which other people can benefit. That, I mean, if I could do 10% of that myself, I think I would be doing something pretty great. I think that remains the great challenge. He has this lively sense of the gospel, and the gospel is for today. It's not just something in the past.
He's famous for many quotes and for his prayers. What are some of your favorites?
I think my favorite prayer may be his prayer before the crucifix, which seems to come from the early days of his life, of his conversion, when he prays, "Lord, enlighten the darkness of my heart. Give me faith, give me hope, give me charity to carry out your holy and true command." It's a classic prayer of a young person who's kind of seeking their way. And I think for people of all ages, when we find ourselves kind of in the dark, just praying for that kind of light and some kind of direction in our lives. I think we can probably pray that every day.
As we know, St. Francis is the patron saint of ecology. You mentioned before his love of all creation, something that was very groundbreaking in those times. Do you think he stands as an amazing role model in this regard?
I think he does. I think that we have yet to catch up with Francis on this. It's one of the most mysterious things about his life. It's not something that he talks about very much himself in his writings, but others noticed this direct affective connection with other creatures that made him call them brothers and sisters. I mean, I had a favorite dog when I was growing up, and maybe I could get around to calling her my best friend, but to call other creatures, including inanimate creatures like the sun and the moon, brother and sister, that's a point that I don't think many people have gotten to even today with our supposedly greater awareness of the environment, that personal, not just a kind of intellectual connection, but a heartfelt connection with other creatures.
Why did you personally decide to become a Franciscan friar? What was the main thing that appealed to you?
On one level, I was raised practically by Franciscans. I was baptized by Franciscans. I grew up in a Franciscan parish in Seattle, Washington. I was the one who carried the golf clubs for the friars who went golfing with my dad, and they cooked spaghetti with my mom. So the friars were like my uncles. So when it came time that I felt I had some kind of religious vocation, the one group I didn't want to join was my own uncles. So I applied to the Dominicans, and they turned me down.
Oh, do you know why?
Well, yeah, they said I was only 11 years old, and they wanted me to finish university, which at the time I thought was very excessive. When I finally came around after a very rebellious phase in my life, when I was a number of other things besides Christian or holy, let me tell you, the figure of Francis then reappeared on my horizon in kind of a Pentecostal period of my life, when I saw him as the religious rebel, the one who was really ready to sacrifice everything in order to follow Christ. And it appealed to me then. He appealed to me as a kind of a revolutionary figure following a Christ who for me now was not the Christ of my childhood, but kind of an adult and challenging Christ. And Francis, I thought, was a good role model.
I was speaking there to Brother William Short, a Franciscan scholar and director of Rome's St. Bonaventure College, an international centre for Franciscan studies and research. St. Francis of Assisi's love of the poor and of all creation has inspired a number of musical composers down the ages. Music historian Monsignor Philip Whitmore tells us more in the following programme, produced by Veronica Scaresbrick.
We've just been listening to a modern opera by the great French composer Olivier Messiaen. It was written in 1983, when the composer was 75 years old. Messiaen was a man of deep faith, and it came as no surprise that he chose a religious subject for this, his first and only opera. It's about St. Francis of Assisi. was St. Francis himself, leading the friars in morning prayer. He's singing a passage from one of his most famous prayers, the Canticle of the Sun.
All praise be yours, my Lord, through all that you have made, and first my Lord, brother Sun, who brings the day, through whom you give us light. All praise be yours, my Lord, through sister Moon and stars. In the heavens you have made them bright, precious and fair. All praise be yours, my Lord, through brothers wind and air, both fair and stormy, all the weather's moods, by which you cherish all that you have made. All praise be yours, my Lord, through sister water, so useful, humble, precious, and pure.
St. Francis's love of creatures, especially animals, has inspired many artists and musicians over the centuries. Some of you may know the lovely fresco by Giotto of St. Francis feeding the birds. Rather less well known is a short piano piece by the 19th century Hungarian composer Franz Liszt. It paints a picture in sound of St. Francis preaching to the birds. As you can hear, the birds are still quite excited at this point, but later in the piece they calm down and pay a bit more attention to the saintly preacher. St. Francis has inspired hymn writers too. His Canticle of the Sun is the basis of a popular hymn, All Creatures of Our God and King, Lift Up Your Voice and With Us Sing, O Praise Him, Alleluia. The tune is a German chorale, Lasst uns erfreuen, written in Cologne early in the 17th century. The original words were addressed to Our Lady, rejoicing that her sorrows had been banished by the resurrection of her Son. That's why there are so many Alleluias. The tune has spread to many different countries, and new texts have been supplied not only in English, but in Italian, in Portuguese, and in other languages too. It was a truly inspired choice by the country clergyman William Draper to make an adaptation of St. Francis's Canticle of the Sun to be sung to this tune. Those ringing alleluias perfectly match the joyful spirit of praise pouring forth from sun and stars, earth and seas, and from every creature of our God and King.
On the theme of Francis of Assisi, Veronica went to see a famous oil painting depicting the saint preaching to the birds that's located inside the Jesuit Mother Church here in Rome. Let's listen to her report.
I'm in a church today, as you can hear from the background sound. I'm with Breda Innes, who's a professor of fine arts. Breda, we're going to do something strange today because this is the very place where St. Ignatius of Loyola, the founder of the Jesuits, is buried. Yet, to the right-hand side of the main altar, there's a little chapel which is dedicated to St. Francis. Now, today the Franciscans and the Jesuits do get along, but in the old days they were great rivals, weren't they?
Yes, but, I mean, maybe it's almost the opposite, I don't know. Various ways of interpreting this, because essentially St. Ignatius Loyola wanted to emulate St. Francis, living simply with very clear rules and regulations, etc., which he obviously did. He brought these rules and regulations also to a much more intellectual, sophisticated level, never losing simplicity and the sense of poverty that the Franciscans had. Now, if you look at the Jesuit Church, there's a very big iconographical plan laid out by the Jesuits for the church. But what seems to slip out are these two little, tiny little sort of circular chapels, each side of the main altar, which seem to be tucked away. And they seem like little secret chapels. In a way, they represent the secret heart of Ignatius as a man and his personal veneration for St. Francis. So I always see these two little chapels as his heart and his little personal diary, whereas the rest of the Jesuit church are his armour, and never forgetting either that the Jesuits are evangelical soldiers.
That's far too many ideas, Breda. Now we want to see the picture of St. Francis with the most beautiful birds in the world. What strikes you is obviously St. Francis in his brown habit with, bare hands, bare feet, and one can see there's a bit of light on his face. And behind him, two capuchins, a big tree, lilacs or an oak tree. And then to the left of the picture is the most fascinating part, just a green landscape with all the soldier birds flying towards St. Francis.
This is the most fascinating painting I have ever seen relating to birds, an oil painting done by a Northern European painter. Look,
you have back to when, do you?
Yeah, in the 1600s. So you have St. Francis simply dressed in his robes, bending slightly forward and talking with one of his hands out towards the birds. He's giving them instructions and preaching to them. All the birds are standing to attention, and even the ones in flight are concentrating all their energy on St. Francis. And the perfection of the way of painting these birds is such that the artist was able to capture the sense of their paying attention to what Francis was saying. It's not just a painting with birds nicely painted, etc., etc., but they're all standing to attention like soldiers and listening to their general. There's something extraordinarily beautiful about this painting. I mean, every time I see it, I get struck by the dynamic linear factor here. You have all these birds of different colours, different sizes, different types, but they're all have their beaks pointed towards the hand of St. Francis or towards his face. So it's the total concentration on what he's saying and his total involvement with them as well. So this lovely blending of nature and man and spiritual and God all together. But again, I've never seen birds painted as beautiful as this. Never. I don't know, it electrifies me every time I see that. You can see the tension in their standing and paying attention, and they're strong and almost human in their way of posing and listening. It's very electrifying. And the fact that they're all lined up side by side, and some in front, some in the back, and then others coming down out of the sky, and others coming from outside the painting. So the whole thing lends to a massive sense of energy and power.
And that was Breda Ennis, Professor of Fine Arts, in a programme produced by Veronica Scaresbrick. The Pontifical Commission for the Protection of Minors has concluded its annual plenary assembly with a renewed commitment to its mandate as an advisory body to Pope Francis for the protection of minors. In an interview with Vatican Radio, Commission member Father Hans Zollner spoke of the key areas of focus during the plenary and of the lessons learnt during the past 3 years of work. He also spoke of the encouragement expressed by the Pope during a private audience at the start of the plenary. During that meeting, Pope Francis said the Church would respond with the firmest measures possible against priests who abuse children, promising zero tolerance for this crime. Father Zollner says the greatest achievement is that the Commission exists, is continuing its mandate, and has been able to promote intervention and safeguarding formation sessions within the church.
For about 3 years now, this commission has been established and worked, which means before that there wasn't such a commission. And as the Holy Father said last Thursday in the audience, he intends to continue the mandate of a newly composed membership, but the commission will continue. The biggest indirect achievement is that the commission exists, and by way of this, the commission has been able to promote intervention and safeguarding. Formation sessions has achieved that the theme of sexual abuse of minors committed by clergy is a topic that is now present in all local churches, that many local churches have already had formation sessions, have already sent in their guidelines to the Holy See, how to deal with victims of abuse, how to deal with perpetrators, what we can do in terms of safeguarding in schools, in the parishes, etc. And we have a number of concrete things that have been achieved, like a day of prayer for victims, a model for guidelines that has been sent out to all bishops' conferences. One major working group effort has been the one for the working group of contact with survivors and victims of abuse that has had constant interaction with single victims, with groups of victims, and we have come up with some suggestion to the Holy Father, a proposal how the voice of victims can be heard also for the renewed membership of the Commission in a new mandate, how it can be even stronger, more focused, and capable of having a real impact on the work of the Commission and beyond that.
And what are the lessons learned? What would you say?
The lessons are, that we learned are, first, that we have had to deal with expectations that went far beyond our remit, our scope, and that went far beyond our capacities, personal, time-wise, energy-wise. And that was unfortunately also reflected in publicly mirrored expectations, like we would do away with every single case of sexual abuse, we would solve every case that has ever happened. So we had to deal with this kind of imagination that the commission would be magically do away with cases and would do away with all the wrongdoings that have happened over decades. That is unfortunately not possible. I think we have to communicate 100 and 1,000 times again and again that this is not the remit of the commission. We do not deal with cases. The cases are dealt with the dicasteries, especially Congregation for the Doctrine of the Faith, and the Holy Father repeated that he wants to send more personnel to that congregation so that the cases can be dealt with more expediently and to the better of all parties involved.
That was Father Hans Zollner of the Pontifical Commission for the Protection of Minors. And that's all we have time for on today's programme. Thanks so much for joining us here on Vatican Radio. I'm Susie Hodges, and until next time, Laudato Jesus Christus.